This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 11th of March 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. This is your daily appointment with our international critics and cultural experts to find out the shows to see, the books to read, and indeed the music to hear each week. Today we're discussing theatre, and in fact some of the highlights from Broadway, with the critic Matt Wolfe from the International New York Times. We're going to be talking about Dame Helen Mirren as Queen Elizabeth II. We'll also hear all about Larry David's new play, Fish in the Dark, and there'll be other bits and bobs in there as well, don't you worry. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. So, Matt Wolfe, welcome.
Nice to be here.
Thank you very much for coming to the new format.
Okay.
Let's begin with, talking of new formats, The Audience, a play which people in London will know because it's been on here for a very long time. In fact, it's still on with a slightly different cast. It's now hit Broadway and Queen Elizabeth II is being played by the original Queen, Helen Mirren.
Yeah, the stage queen, stage royalty. Dame Helen, of course, won an Oscar for playing the Queen on screen 8 years ago, I guess, something like that. And ever since she tackled the role again in Peter Morgan's play on the West End in 2013, the word has been that she wanted to take the play to Broadway and maybe add a Tony to her collection of trophies. And I suspect, given the general adulation with which her performance has been received in New York, that she will when the Tonys come around in June. Having said that, I'm not sure the audience as a play was necessarily a dead cert for New York because of what it's about. It's about the Queen's relationship with prime ministers across the decades, most of whom New Yorkers don't know.
You mean you don't know about Sir Anthony Eden and Harold Macmillan?
All I can tell you, Steve, is it was really hilarious to be sitting in the Gerald Schoenfeld Theatre with 1,060 other people watching them look utterly blank at Gordon Brown represented on stage. And I'm thinking, who? So they've added in a little bit of Tony Blair, just a little bit, because we Americans might
remember him.
Might have heard of him, just if we can scratch our gray cells a bit. And obviously, Churchill registers. And in fact, the actor who plays Churchill in New York, Dakin Matthews, is wonderful. And they know Thatcher, of course.
Of course I do. Let's hear a little bit of The Audience.
Every Tuesday at approximately 6:30 p.m., the Queen of the United Kingdom has a private audience with her Prime Minister. The meeting takes place in the private audience room located on the first floor of Buckingham Palace.
I only ever wanted to be ordinary.
In which way do you consider you have failed in that ambition?
In this audience, prime ministers will fall under your spell.
There's a joke in there, which I don't think many Americans will get, which is the man who talks about being ordinary there, and the Queen says, you know, essentially you are, is John Major, who people in Britain will know very well was seen as rather a dull, grey prime minister. Again, I don't know. I wonder sort of how well this really translates to a New York audience.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, Steve, because the John Major bit, and he's acted pretty well by the American actor Dylan Baker in New York, comes at the very beginning of the play. And it sort of gets the play off to a quizzical start because you're aware that the Americans are thinking, there's something going on here, but we don't know what it is. They've put a crib sheet in the playbill telling you who all these men are. But of course, all that means is that people are then illuminating their mobile phones to try to read who's coming next.
Harold Wilson? Is he the one with the pipe? What? No?
Exactly. So Thatcher registers on two counts, not least because she's the only woman.
Well, indeed.
And not hard to spot as a result.
My other concern about this play to an American audience is that, now, look, there are many Britons who love the royal family and will go on and on about how wonderful the royals are. But even they are not as effusive in their love for the royals as a certain strata of American society who, frankly, then sort of see British society in this very strange, traditional, oh, isn't it all fancy kind of way. And does this play up to that and sort of reinforce those stereotypes?
It absolutely does. I mean, the play is a sort of deification or sanctification of the act of monarchy, but particularly this monarch. And Stephen Daldry, who directed it, who's extremely shrewd, and this is possibly his canniest piece of directing yet. He's really played up for New York the first act finale of the play, which is basically a gilded recreation of the coronation in all of its pomp and ceremony and splendor. And you can feel the New York audience just absolutely swooning. If only we had this, they're saying to themselves.
I'm sure if this play doesn't have upfront funding from the British government, there must be a little bit here and there, because it will be very good for tourism. That's the audience. We're going to stay on Broadway. Larry David's new play, Fish in the Dark. Larry David, you know. What can one say? You know, we can talk about Seinfeld, we can talk about Curb Your Enthusiasm. When it comes to, you know, Larry David on stage, or certainly, you know, writing for the stage, is he as much of a hit maker, if I can use that phrase?
Well, my enthusiasm was greatly curbed for this event. However, to answer that question, he is a hit maker. The entire run of this show, and this is very unusual for New York, less so for London, was sold out before opening night, the entire run, including premium tickets, which are selling for $499
wow.
a piece.
And this was before reviews?
Before the opening night. And the reviews have come out. There have been some okay ones. There have been some not very good ones at all. But it won't make any difference. And probably they're going to extend the run so as to maximize profits. I am sort of neutral about Larry David as a television presence. I admire him more than I love him. But I wasn't neutral about this play, which is really, really feeble. He has written the play and also appears in it. He apparently has not been in a play since he was in eighth grade, which, given that he's 67, was originally a long time ago. And he's rather awkwardly cast in a play in which the woman who plays his mother, a wonderful New York actress called Jane Houdyshell, is younger than he is. But that's not going to stop him, of course.
Right. Okay. That's an interesting take. Normally the leading lady could be sort of 20 or 30 years younger and no one really blinks an eye at that, but you'd imagine the mother, well, there we are.
Yeah.
Does it matter that, you know, that you don't like it, the critics don't like
no,
it, if it sells out before, you know, before it even begins?
No. It's that rare New York play which really is critic proof, as opposed to something like The Audience, which I think really did need the imprimatur of the critics behind it to get people to go despite their lack of familiarity maybe with the material. Nobody is unfamiliar with Larry David and what he represents. And his fan base, I guess, will be pleased, although he doesn't strike me as a natural stage presence. He spent a lot of the matinee I attended having vocal trouble, clearing his throat, sort of repeating lines that he hadn't quite begun correctly. There's a lot of technical stuff about doing stage. You can't just do another take. And I don't know how he's going to hold up for the rigors of a 12 or 14 week run.
Yeah, that's a lot to do if he's struggling early on. Okay, well, I mean, I would say, you know, Matt, you're obviously saying don't go and see it, but you can't go and see it anyway.
You can't go see it anyway unless you have friends connected to the production. Then you want to pay $1,000. Sure you can.
Okay, well, there we are. Let's assume we don't. That was one you didn't like. We'll save the one that you really, really like for the moment. But first of all, Honeymoon in Vegas. Before you tell us about it, let's hear about it.
When you say Vegas,
Vegas,
you're saying love, you're saying diamond rings, and all the things that little girls dream of.
Betsy's getting married, yes sirree, it's true. Finally Jack got it through his head. Betsy's getting married, long past overdue. 31 years of holding tight and crossing my fingers every night. You better believe I'm wearing white, 'cause Betsy's getting wet.
As if you didn't need telling, that's a musical. It's one based on the film of the same name.
Yeah.
Which came out in the 90s.
It's a long time ago.
I mean, I don't remember it.
I was just going to say, Steve, do people really remember this film? It was 1992. It was Nicolas Cage, Sarah Jessica Parker. And, I mean, James...
Nicolas Cage was in a musical?
No, no, the film wasn't a musical.
Oh, right, okay.
No.
Okay, that makes more sense now.
This is part of the ongoing trend on Broadway, and in London, it's not unique to Broadway, of musicalizing every third film that comes down the pike. And some of the choices, like The Producers and Catch Me If You Can, make sense. Others, it's like, what? And this is definitely in the what category. Let's just suffice to say that there's a song in the first act about the glories or not of having skin cancer. Yes,
right.
I rest my case. It's basically about a fretful young couple on the eve of possibly getting married. You've heard the song snippet there, Betsy's getting married. And the wife ends up, or the would-be wife, ends up in the care of a Las Vegas con man played by one-time television star Tony Danza. And the whole thing is kind of seedy and cheesy and looks like it belongs in Las Vegas rather than on Broadway. And I'm not surprised, despite better reviews, I think, than it merits, it's not doing the business.
Okay, let's cram two more in just to prove that, you know, there is some good stuff to see.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff.
In New York. Let's talk about Constellations first. This was, you know, a Royal Court production here in the UK with Rose Ball, Sally Hawkins. It was, you know, everyone who saw it was like, you must go, you have to go. Tickets became like gold dust. They've got a different cast for New York.
Yeah, and I saw it twice in London and loved it in London, and I liked it even more in New York. Jake Gyllenhaal, who of course is American, Ruth Wilson, who's English, they both play English. Gyllenhaal's English accent is impeccable. And what's different about it in New York is that Ruth Wilson is a more fiery, feisty actress than Sally Hawkins, who is nonetheless wonderful, but it has a little more animation and energy in New York. And as a result, what happens in the play, which I shouldn't give away, is even more moving. It's very, very rewarding theater.
You've seen it now three times,
yeah,
with the two different casts. Does it, mm-hmm. Is it a play that you feel improves with every viewing, or you can, because it is, as you say, it's quite an emotional play.
It's funny because the play has a trick to it, which we mustn't give away. And you'd think if you know the trick, it's going to be less moving. But in fact, it's more moving because you see how well crafted the play is. Also, it's 70 minutes. So seeing it three times isn't a great chunk out of one's life. It's not like the next play we're going to talk about.
No, indeed. So finally, The Iceman Cometh, Nathan Lane. This is not 70 minutes at all.
This is 5 hours. So seeing it three times would be the better part of a day. It is absolutely brilliant. This is an off-Broadway production at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. Nathan Lane, Brian Dennehy. It's Eugene O'Neill's Titanic masterwork. Last seen in London with Kevin Spacey. Basically about stripping away the illusions by which we all live. I wouldn't say it's a fun evening out. It's not jolly, but it's extraordinary to see an actor, Nathan Lane, a beloved comic actor, so tremendously well change gears and reveal that behind the laughter of the clown is a bona fide tragedian.
How does it compare to the Kevin Spacey version?
I thought Nathan Lane was better because the thing about Kevin Spacey, who was wonderful, but you were always aware that he was acting. He had that act button on above his head. Nathan Lane is being, not acting.
That kind of is Kevin Spacey's problem, isn't it?
I mean, slightly, even
if you want to talk about House of Cards, which is obviously very sort of theatrical in the way he's playing Frank Underwood, but he is acting.
You feel with
Kevin... I feel like I want to do the air quotes.
Yeah, you're doing it very, very well, Steve. You feel with Spacey, who knows how to pick roles that suit that.
Mm.
You feel the performances being kind of manufactured in front of your eyes, and that can be kind of thrilling. But something like Iceman, which digs very, very deep into the way in which people deceive themselves in their own lives and seek solace in the bottle or whatever. There's something about just being ruthlessly honest and true, and Nathan Lane captures that hair-raisingly well.
It's funny in that we are often surprised or profess to be surprised when an actor known for being a comic actor or indeed just a straight-out comedian, you know, like, you know, Nathan Lane, turns out to be a brilliant serious actor, you know, and we've seen it again on film recently with Steve Carell in Foxcatcher.
Yes, yes.
And yet, you know, there is actually something about being a comedian or making people laugh that is often far harder than just doing straight acting.
Well, look at the late and really great Robin Williams, or Jim Carrey for that matter, going all the way back to Charlie Chaplin. The Janus face side of clowning is the where you have the capacity for laughter, you have the capacity for tears, and Nathan Lane has both.
There we are. The Iceman Cometh if you had to choose one of the five, it would be that, wouldn't it?
Yes, and Constellation's close runner-up.
Okay, well, there we are. Matt Wolfe, theatre critic for International New York Times, thank you very much indeed. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Steve Bloomfield. Our producers were Holly Fisher and Marcus Hippie. Tomorrow, Anne Meadows will be here talking books. But for now, thanks for listening.